We're very pleased to continue our study in the 27th Psalm. In this psalm, the writer, whom we believe to be David, is expressing his great trust and confidence in God. And he draws upon the fact that God has protected him and given him his aid and comfort in the past. And as a result of God having done this in the past, he produces this as evidence that God then will continue to do this. And that we should also have this same confidence that the writer has. And then he shows how that he wants to be close to God. He desires to live in the house of the Lord all the days of his life, to behold the beauty of the Lord, to inquire in his temple. And then he begins to show how that he continues to need this God. He continues to need his help and assistance, and so he cries for God to continue to help him. In the 7th verse he says, "Hear, O Lord, when I cry with my voice. Have mercy also upon me, and answer me. When thou saidest, Seek ye my face, my heart said unto thee, Thy face, Lord, will I seek. Hide not thy face far from me, put not thy servant away in anger. Thou hast been my help, leave me not, neither forsake me, O God of my salvation. When my father and my mother forsake me, then the Lord will take me up." Showing that the Lord was so faithful that whenever he arrived at that point in life, when his father and mother did forsake him, and this would probably be the death of the father and the mother, then the Lord was still there. The Lord was unchanged, unmoved, still had all that great ability to give him assistance, even when he arrived at the point when the father and the mother could no longer be of assistance to him. And this is all to us a very great emotional time in life when we arrive at that point when we no longer have our father and our mother. As children, we think of it with a sense of dread. What's going to happen when I don't have mother and daddy around anymore? But when that time does come, remember the Lord is still unchanged. The Lord still has all the strength and power and ability to help us as ever, and we can still depend upon him just as much as we ever did. That seems to be what the 10th verse is saying. Then in the 11th verse he says, "Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies." In this 11th verse, he's continuing to ask God to hear him. And we learn a lot from this verse because he tells us a great truth that is of most benefit to us. He says, "Teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies." Now he's saying this with a view to the fact that he does have enemies. He does have those that are opposed to him. He does have those that he's asking God to help him because of the problem, because of their presence. And one of the ways, one of the necessary things we must be involved in order to overcome our enemies, is to learn the way of the Lord. "Teach me thy way and lead me in a plain path because of mine enemies." In other words, it's not a matter of learning more about the enemies. It's not a matter of learning more about how to fight and deal with enemies, but it's a matter of learning more about the way of the Lord. It's a matter of being led in the plain path or the right path in order for us to be able then to effectively deal with the enemies. We get closer to God so that we then can overcome the enemies. That's the teaching here. Now, to teach me thy way means that he is asking God to instruct him, to give him guidance as to what way to walk, what way to conduct his life. We're all walking in a way as we live on this earth. We're either in the way of righteousness or we're in the way of that which is not righteousness. And thy way, O Lord, is, of course, is the way that God would have us to walk. And it's proper, it's appropriate for us to ask God to give us instruction. Now, this doesn't mean that he's going to miraculously strike us down with a vision, but it does mean that he can enlighten us as we read and study, as we meditate upon his word. We can then have understanding, and we can have wisdom, and he has promised to give us that when we work at learning what his word is. So teach me thy way, O Lord, and lead me in a plain path. Now, a plain path would be a path that is level. We'll be able to get a sure footing. We can see where we're going. It is not the path of the crooked. And he's simply saying here that he wants to be led in the path of God, in the way of God. And this is because of mine enemies. As we said earlier, this is the way to overcome enemies. Get closer to God. If God's going to help us, if God's going to assist us, then we must be one that is truly following after the will of God. And so if you want to overcome your enemies, you simply get closer to God and then depend upon God to help you. Now, it doesn't mean that we'll do nothing in this effort to overcome our enemies, but it does mean that we're going to be doing the very thing that God wants us to do, and that whatever we do will be under the guidance of God, and consequently we'll be having the victory because God's going to be assisting us. He further says in verse 12, "Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies." Now the word will here means the wish. So we see that God does have the power to let our enemies invade our lives and to cause us to have all kinds of problems. He does have the power to allow our enemies to overcome us. We can be delivered over to the will or to the wishes or to the desires of the enemies so that whatever they want to have happen to us will happen. And this can be something God will let happen. But he prays that God not do this. Deliver me not over unto the will of mine enemies. And he further elaborates upon this by saying, "For false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty." So he describes some of the nature of his enemies. First of all, he says, false witnesses are risen up against me. Now, a false witness is one who will tell a lie about you, who will tell something that is simply not the truth, who will make an accusation that is false, or who will distribute some kind of information about you that is certainly not in accordance with the true facts. And this, of course, can be a very detrimental thing. This can be a terrific problem when we have someone that's doing this. But he says this is the nature of his enemies. False witnesses are risen up against me. And he further says, and such as breathe out cruelty. To breathe out cruelty would mean that you have threatening language, that you are indicating that you're going to produce or bring about some kind of violence or some kind of bad effect upon the person that you are breathing this out against. And of course, that's what his enemies were doing to him. So he's describing these enemies to God. He's asking God to not deliver him over to the will of the enemies, for false witnesses are risen up against me, and such as breathe out cruelty. And we see here then that it's most appropriate for us to ask God for these very things. We ask God to deliver us from our enemies, to not allow the enemies to have their wish or their desire over us. We ask God to lead us, to teach us, to show us what is right, what is the correct way to go because of these enemies. And so we then find ourselves not fighting like the enemy, not becoming like the enemy, but we find ourselves getting closer to God, depending more upon God, and asking God to give us guidance so that our path, our actions, will truly be the things that God wants us to do. And then we have the victory. Then we can overcome the enemy. When we become like the enemy, when we begin to fight like the enemy fights, when we are acting in such a way that you can't tell any difference in our behavior and the behavior of the enemy, then we're really not doing the proper thing. We need to get close to God. We need to have a trust, a dependence, and a confidence in God. And we need to be asking God for this kind of help, just as the psalmist here does. We plainly make our request known. We ask God to hide not thy face far from me. We ask God to teach me thy way, to lead me in a plain path, to deliver me not over under the will of mine enemies. And then we see that this is very appropriate, and God then will respond to this, because this is the example we have given for us as to how to behave under these very adverse circumstances. In the 13th verse, he begins to sum up and to bring to a conclusion the thoughts of this psalm. And one of the most outstanding things that he wants to impress upon the readers is the fact that there must be a belief, a confidence in God. He says in the 13th verse, "I had fainted unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living." Now these words, "I had fainted," are really added by the translators. They're not necessary, but they do lend some to the sense of it. And what he's simply saying here is that unless I had believed to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living, in other words, unless I had had confidence and a true belief that God would bring about his goodness, that God would bring about these blessings and this mercy, in the land of the living, which happens to be where I'm at now. I'm in the land of the living, on this world, in this earth. And of course, he's in the land of Israel at the time this is being written, but this would apply any place. All of us who are alive are in the land of the living. And so we have to believe, we have to have a confidence that God will bring about his goodness here in this life. All of his goodness is not reserved for after this life or after death. All of his goodness is not going to be only given in the time that we're in heaven. But God does bring about goodness now, in this life, among his people here now on this earth. And unless we believe this, we will faint. That is, we will not have the courage, we will not have the fortitude and the strength to carry us through. So regardless of what kind of trials we're in, regardless of what kind of problems we may have, we must have a confidence in God. We must have a trust in God, that God will bring about his will, that God will cause goodness to happen to us. And he does it while we're in the land of the living. And so, regardless of how dark the hour may be, or how great the trials may seem to be, or how formidable the enemies are, or what kind of methods they may be using, how low we seem to get, we must believe that we're going to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. This is the one sustaining thought that will carry us through. This confidence, this faith, this belief that God will do this. And so the psalmist expresses this very plainly. It's something that we must take ourselves today and apply to our lives. We must make it a part of our everyday philosophy that we believe that we're going to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living while we're here now alive in this present state. Now this is assuming, of course, that we are godly people. It's assuming that we do love and obey this great God in heaven. It is assuming that we are in favor with God and that we are not in a state in which our sins have not been forgiven. We're not in a state in which we're truly alienated to him. We're not in a state in which we're outside of his church, but we are truly worshipers and followers of the living God. Then we can have this sustaining faith, this all-powerful belief that we're going to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. Now, if the psalmist, with all of the faith and confidence that he has in God, if he says he would have fainted, or if he implies that he would not be able to sustain himself without this belief, just think how important it is for us. We must cultivate this belief that we're going to see the goodness of the Lord, that we're going to see the goodness of the Lord now, that is, in this life, while we're under our present circumstances or trials or problems, we're going to be able to see the goodness of the Lord. And that's a very important facet in our peace of mind. It's a very important facet in our ability to have security and in our ability to keep on keeping on. So if it's necessary for the psalmist, it's certainly necessary for us. Let's cultivate this idea. Let's cultivate this feeling that we must believe. We must have the confidence that God's going to bring about his goodness in this life and deliver us from our difficulties. And then we come to the true conclusion of this psalm in the 14th verse, wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thine heart. Wait, I say, on the Lord. So he tells us precisely what to do. Wait on the Lord. That is, we allow God to work in his own good time. Be of good courage. Courage means that you do the things that you're able to do. You just simply, you do what you know that you can do. When we break and run, when we fail to do the things that we know we can do, then we have certainly not had courage. It doesn't mean that we're able to do everything. The word courage doesn't really even mean bravery. It just simply means you do what you're able to do. When we don't even try, when we don't even work at it, then we haven't had courage. So be of good courage, he said. Same thing he told Joshua when he went into the land of Canaan. And he shall strengthen thine heart. God's going to give us the strength then to carry through. If we show that we have the willingness to do, then God's going to produce us with the strength so that we can have the resolve to carry it out. Then he concludes by saying, wait, I say, on the Lord. And there's a lot of meaning in this phrase, wait on the Lord. These are the actions that we are to take when we're in a time of distress. And it's described here as waiting on the Lord. Nothing can be more interesting than to see a good man, calm and patient, while in a very distressed condition. To see a godly man in a state of deep affliction is calculated to awaken attention. Such a one is a witness for God. he has an opportunity afforded him of showing the reality and the efficiency and the excellency of the religion he professes. David, therefore, in this condition, you see, had a chance to serve God. Yet natural men apply to creatures to help in their afflictions. For example, when King Ahaz was in trouble, he took away a portion out of the house of the Lord and out of the house of the king and out of the princes and gave it unto the king of Assyria. But he helped him not, and in the time of his distress did he trespass yet more against the Lord. 2 Chronicles 28:21. Again, when Ephraim saw his sickness and Judah saw his wound, then he went Ephraim to Assyria, to the Assyrian, and sent to Jareb, yet he could not heal you or cure you of your wound. Hosea 5:13. God complained to the Jews because he says they turn not to him that smiteth them, neither do they seek the Lord of hosts. Isaiah 9:13. Though they turn to creatures. Many times when man is in trouble, he employs the devil's devices. He seeks to soothe his bothered spirit with the balm of infidelity, or he squanders his energies on the world, or he may seek to forget his troubles with the bowl of intemperance. Man can pursue this course to such a point that God loses patience with him and will refuse to help him. In Judges 10:13-14, yet ye have forsaken me and served other gods, wherefore I will deliver you no more. Go and cry unto the gods which ye have chosen. Let them deliver you in the time of your tribulation. Yet a Christian had rather die at the feet of Jesus than to resort to these ungodly actions of frustration. So the psalmist David waits for the Lord, waits for the mercy of the Lord, and that's what he instructs us to do. So it was in the days of Hosea. Come, said they, let us return unto the Lord, for he hath torn, and he will heal. He will heal us. He hath smitten, and he will bind us up. After 2 days will he revive us. In the third day he shall raise us up, and we shall live in his sight. Hosea 6:1-2. David says, I wait for the Lord. My soul doth wait, and in his word do I hope. Psalm 130:5. And so here he instructs us to wait for the Lord. So waiting includes not only seeking, but expecting. Waiting patiently for the Lord implies that God does not always immediately come to release and to relieve his people when they think they most stand in need. No, he is not indeed slack concerning his promise, as some men count slackness, but when he does not come to our relief and assistance at the time we expect, we feel disappointed. But he is not bound to observe our prescribed rules. He must know in his infinite wisdom that we have very properly fixed the times and the seasons for him to display himself. Yet we can depend upon it. In his own good time and way, he will listen to our prayer and interpose for us. He has said, he that believeth shall not make haste. Isaiah 28:16. If the Lord appear to tarry long, we're to wait for him. The farmer does not go out and murmur at the clouds or blame the weather. He well knows that there must be a season between sowing and reaping, and that the various influences of nature, the rough and the smooth, the pleasing and the frowning, all operate and combine to produce the final result. Therefore he waiteth. James 5:7, behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth and hath long patience for it until he receive the early and latter rain. Be ye also patient. Now it is very trying to flesh and blood to wait for God thus, especially under some trying circumstances. But let us remember that we have no claim upon God. Think how long we kept him waiting for us. How long he stood knocking at the door of our hearts, week after week, month after month, before we rose up and opened unto him. Then it becomes us to exercise full confidence in God, to feel assured that he will fulfill his promises, that his delays will be advantageous, and that his time is the best time. Therefore it is said in Isaiah 30:18, blessed are all they that wait for him. They are blessed because they are preserved from the more painful thoughts others feel who disobey him. They are preserved from the misunderstandings of those who charge him foolishly and unkindly before he explains himself. And they are preserved from those sinful and improper methods that others use to extricate themselves from present difficulties and to obtain relief. Abraham did this when he said of Sarah, she is my sister. And Rebekah deceived Isaac so that Jacob would get the blessing instead of Esau. This very same thing happened. Had they let God alone, so to speak, to bring about his purpose in his own time and way, how many stripes and how many storms would they have escaped? We give honor to God when we confide in him. In 1 Samuel 2:30, them that honor me will I honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. So as David concludes this psalm in the last two verses, he's simply telling us that we must believe that we're going to see the goodness of the Lord in the land of the living. We must have that faith, that confidence, and we must wait on the Lord. Let the Lord bring about His own will at His own time. We simply do our part. We remain faithful. We remain steadfast. We have good courage. Be of good courage, he says. We do what we know we can do. And we let Him strengthen our heart. He's going to give us the ability to carry through. He's going to give us the mind that'll be strengthened, that'll have the confidence, that'll have the feeling of victory and success. He'll take away the despair. He'll take away the depression. He will strengthen thine heart. Now, you know, we many times can have a weak mind in that we faint. We don't have any courage. We don't have any feeling that we're going to be able to get through this thing. But the Lord, if we wait on Him, He will strengthen thine heart. He'll give us that feeling in which we're going to have the confidence and the courage to go through with it. And so he concluded by saying, wait, I say, on the Lord. Let the Lord bring about His will in His own good time. We simply do our part. We trust in Him, and we have confidence in Him. Well, we're going to close our lesson at that point. That concludes the 27th Psalm, a psalm that is certainly designed to give us trust and confidence in God in time of need. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.